The Conversation, an online service that's been up for 2 weeks, bringing Australian academic expertise to you and yours in a way not seen in such depth before. Here's the man behind it, Andrew Jaspin.
I used to edit The Age, and while I was at The Age, I was really watching, particularly during the run-up to the GFC, the way in which managements were being forced to cut back in every single area of the journalism that we did. We had to cut back on our physical numbers of journalists. We had to cut back on the services we were doing. We had to also tighten our books, as it's known, which meant that the service we were giving readers was, frankly, getting shallower. And I was really concerned about what this would mean for the future of quality journalism. When I left The Age at the end of 2008, I was invited to do some work for the University of Melbourne. And during that period, I looked at how the university was engaging with the public. Now, the University of Melbourne sees itself very much as a public-spirited organisation. And what that means is it's funded by the public and ought to engage better in terms of transferring its knowledge, transferring its wisdom, and by wisdom I mean the fact that there are 3,500 academics who know a lot, but they weren't really managing to engage. And I thought, well, this is a wonderful resource, and this was my idea. It's very simple. Why don't we turn the university into a giant newsroom? Every newsroom has specialists, so you have a science writer, an environment writer, a health writer, etc. If you look just at, say, the University of Melbourne, they have 400 people just working on stem cell research. There are 70 people working in the politics department. So, you know, suddenly from just having one politics reporter or specialist, you could have 70. Now, that was not a bad idea, but when I took this idea to Glyn Davis, who's the Vice-Chancellor of the University of Melbourne, he said, but I can't afford to fund that myself. You have to hire professional editors who will commission and help academics turn their academic English into plain English, which becomes then usable to the wider public. So what happened was he said, look, that's actually a more powerful idea. So we then introduced the idea to the group of eight universities, which is the eight largest universities responsible for 70% of all research in Australia. Then we went to the CSIRO, who also enthusiastically came on board to support us. And since then, University of Technology of Sydney also came on board, and there's a couple of others we're talking to. So as a result, we've now got the bulk of the big research institutions in Australia supporting us, and obviously their staff, their academics, are able to write for us on complex issues. And this is the big trick, by the way, is turning academics who have generally workflows which are on the basis of writing a book, you know, every 2 years, or an article or a paper every year, to actually writing that day.
But it's called a conversation. How do you have a conversation with, you know, 2,000, 3,000 people? I mean, isn't the public overwhelmed?
Well, look, you're taking the name very literally. The reason we chose the name was that we believe, at the end of the day, every civilised society requires to have good conversations going on. And dealing with complex, live, contemporary issues, whatever they may be, across the gamut from the arts, culture, all the way through to the sciences, in a way in which you give those conversations greater depth. And that's really what this is about, giving the context, the understanding for where issues have come from, where they might be going, certain solutions. Just having a better informed citizenry, if you like, we think is the crux of good national conversations.
Andrew Jaspin. Megan Clement helps organise the energy and environment section of The Conversation, an enormous portfolio.
It is a huge section, and I suppose for that reason it's quite exciting. How do we cope? We just sort of do. I mean, it helps that it's a really fascinating section, so I mean, you want to know more.
Has it got fractious yet?
Well, that's really what The Conversation is trying to avoid, and I think we do a pretty good job of it. I mean, yes, the environment, it can be such a vitriolic kind of area, but if you're talking to authorities, if you're talking to experts, you can really cut through the kind of hyperbole and the bile, really, that gets thrown about in the media and, you know, even on the floors of Parliament. What we find with the comments is that if you give people good, authoritative, clear-headed articles to read, can't be guaranteed, but people do sort of tend to respond in a clear-headed way. And obviously it's the internet, so there are trolls and there's that kind of thing. But I mean, we're trying to foster a community that will exclude that kind of behaviour rather than engaging with it. So we have systems for reporting abuse and that kind of thing. And we also hierarchically value the comments of people who are in the area over just sort of general sort of ranting. So I think that helps foster a more clear-headed debate.
You've been open 5 minutes, well, a couple of weeks. Some of the stories you've covered.
Ah, wow, yeah, it's a wide gamut. We've obviously looked at Fukushima and the future of nuclear. We've looked at how we recover from the floods. We've looked at what caused the floods, why we eat meat, mass deaths of animals across the world and why that happens, of the ethics behind climate change, the economic reasons for acting on climate change. It's been pretty wide so far, even in these early
And these countries. Initiated by the academics of the universities or yourselves?
It's a bit of both. Obviously, in the very early stages, it's been us hitting the phones, calling people up, saying, hey, we want to hear about this, what can you tell us? But now that the site's live, we have got people saying, hey, I want to write about this, why aren't you covering this? So that's really exciting when the academics come back at us.
In terms of environment, how do you fit with the rest of the media in Australia, do you think?
General newspapers or the ABC will write a piece or broadcast a piece where they will call on an expert and have a few quotes, I guess. We're saying to the experts, the academics, tell us the whole story. So as journalists, we're one step back, I guess, when we're really letting the academics tell the story of what their expertise is.
How long is long? What's your record?
Look, we've been pleasantly surprised. They've been pleasingly concise. So 1,500 words is about the longest I've got, which is completely digestible, really. So they've been very well behaved so far.
And do you get the impression that your readers, the people online, the public, is looking at, you know, 1,500 words, 2,000 words?
Yeah. I mean, from what we've been seeing on Twitter, the discussions people have been having in the comments, you know, it's in-depth stuff. People have really read the whole content and engaged with it. And I think it's perhaps a misnomer to say that people on the internet have no attention span. I think you've just got to give them really good stuff to read and they will read it.
Megan Clement praising the public capacity for big ideas. Paul Delgano edits the science section itself of The Conversation. How's it gone?
It's been going fantastically well, really. Now that we have launched, the momentum has changed slightly in that people are now coming to us with stories for the site, which is exactly what we want to have.
Have you got a science background yourself, then?
I don't have a science background. I have a magazine editing background and a feature writing and news writing background, which kind of ties into the philosophy of the site. What we're meant to be bringing as journalists is those kind of skills of turning a story into something that a general audience will appreciate and read. So if you like, the fact I'm not a specialist, it kind of works because I'm the bridge between the scientist and the general public. And the theory I'm working on is if I can understand it, then hopefully your virtually educated reader.
You're the filter. It.
I'm the filter, yeah, exactly.
What good stuff have you had come through so far?
Well, we've had a whole range at the moment. Because we were commissioning in the run-up to launch, we've got pieces that are not tied to the news agenda as such, but they're covering issues. For example, we have one from Professor Alan Harvey at the University of Western Australia, which is looking at the importance of music in human evolution. That's an article which in itself sounds interesting, but the fact it's written by somebody working in that field gives it a bit of extra weight.
He's a neuroscientist who's actually been in a rock group. It's amazing. And he's been on the Science Show doing that. He really knows his stuff.
Yeah, he really knows his stuff, and very thankfully from our point of view, he's a great writer too, so he really brought his interest alive for the site. A piece we've had up recently too is by Professor Toby Walsh, who works at NICTA, and he is writing about the issue of singularity, i.e. have we reached a point where computers potentially are more intelligent and more human than the human creators.
I did that a couple of weeks ago when we talked about Jeopardy, you know, where Watson, the computer, is beating the people, which is, you know, a bit worrying.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what this piece is kind of feeding off of. It's off the back of that. And in the case of Watson, I think it did win, but it still didn't come across as human as such as a machine. But each time this happens, whether it's the IBM computer Deep Blue back in the time of Kasparov or now Watson on Jeopardy. I think that the idea is we're getting one step closer to singularity.
So the stuff's been going up. What about the response you've been getting from the public?
The response has been slightly overwhelming, to be honest, in terms of Twitter and Facebook pickup of stories. You get people who say things like, I love the site, or check out this site, it's really interesting, which in itself is great to hear, but almost more gratifying is the amount of shares that we're seeing. So, for example, in the health section, there was a story just on launch on whether stopping bike helmets from being compulsory, basically, for cyclists would cut down the amount of injuries, bike-related injuries. And that piece, we've just seen it shared so many times from people, and there is, in a sense, pardon the pun, but a conversation built up around that one story. And that's what we're seeing with quite a few of them now. They're taking on a life of their own. They have legs beyond just running on our site.
Paul Delgano, science editor, The Conversation. But is it journalism? Andrew Jaspin.
The actual journalism is, first of all, we have 12 editors currently. We're looking to hire more. These editors follow the news cycle, follow not just the news cycle in terms of what's happening today, but the big issues. They then go to our specialist writers and they commission them and ask them to look at an issue. So that issue could be, for example, we have something today on the New South Wales election, which is what next for Barry O'Farrell? You know, what is going to happen to Labour, for example? So you actually subject key issues like that to instant analysis by people who really follow it. It's not just Australia, we're doing the same thing for Libya right now, for example. What next in the Middle East? And the same thing goes, for example, with John Garneau, who's you know, spoken again about the problems with science journalism. The same thing has happened with Peter Doherty, who's written on the subject. And what they're really looking at is what's gone wrong with big national debates around complex science issues, particularly. And I think that leads then to a lot of feedback. I mean, there's been a huge number of comments in which readers have come to the site looking to engage in a grown-up conversation about complex current affairs issues.
How does it fit in, this conversation, with, say, the ABC and, say, with The Age, the broadsheet newspapers you're talking about, going to do them out of business?
Not at all. I mean, look, Robin, first of all, we see ourselves as a wonderful new resource, if you like, for the media. Because think of it as follows, that a lot of the university sector, largely speaking, what's gone on within those organisations has been opaque. People have not been able to see what goes on within our great universities. What we're trying to do is essentially open up a pipe, a big pipe, between the university sector and research sector and the public. And this, we think, will become an information-rich site that the media will be able to either get ideas from it, new people talking about issues, so new people to go to and interview, and so on and so forth. So that's the first thing. The second thing is ABC journalists, like yourself, can write on your website. You can write on the Drum website. You have your own outlet there. Academics currently do not really have an outlet. So this is a different voice. It's not just another voice. This is a different voice coming from a different place where there is a very rich seam of original thinking, which is bound by the fact that our contributors have usually spent a career, professional career, focusing on an area in terms of research, and then bringing all that wisdom, as I called it earlier, to bear on a live subject.
And good luck to you.
Thank you very much, Robin.
Andrew Jaspin is editor of The Conversation, launched 2 weeks ago and going strong, as you heard.